thanks for listening to Talking Architecture and Design, brought to you in association with the Architecture and Design Network. You can catch up with news, projects, interviews, and much more at architectureanddesign.com.au, where you can also subscribe to our newsletters and magazine.
Welcome to Talking Architecture and Design. My name is Branko Miletic, and today we have with us Dr. Duncan Maxwell, Postdoctorate Research Fellow, Head of the Future Building Initiative, Department of Architecture, Monash Art Design and Architecture School. Duncan holds a PhD from the University of Sydney, where he conducted his research within the Innovation in Applied Design Lab at the School of Architecture, Design and Planning. Duncan's research interests lie broadly in the future of the construction industry, with an emphasis on the industrialization of building, that is, the introduction of innovative techniques and processes to define new ways of designing and producing our buildings. In addition, Duncan is also a registered architect in Queensland, and today he will talk to us about the Miami condo collapse from a couple of weeks ago. So welcome to Talking Architecture and Design, Dr. Duncan Maxwell.
Thanks, Branko, and good to join you today.
Thank you. Okay, so I'll just recap what we know so far. So on June the 24th, about just before 1:30 in the morning, the Champlain Towers South, a 12-story beachfront condominium, I hate that word, Duncan, I really do, in the Miami suburb of Surfside, Florida, in the US, partially collapsed. As of July the 7th, which was yesterday, a total of 54 people are confirmed to have died, while 11 were injured. As many as 86 still remain missing. And according to the assistant chief of Miami-Dade Fire Rescue, just based on the facts, he says, there's zero chance of survival. Oh, wow. Okay, Duncan, can you tell me what is your take on the collapse of the Miami condominium? And I'm not even sure what condominium means, but why did it collapse with what you know? And do you know anything more?
Well, obviously, to start with, it's a great tragedy. I think any goes without saying that any building collapse is a devastating issue. And I would say that it obviously, we would struggle to know for certain in these early days and weeks since the true reasons for the collapse. But to my knowledge, I've read a number of reports suggesting that there could be perhaps building detailing issues, installation of reinforcing that perhaps was not complete. But until we have certainty, obviously there's a lot of work that will be required in the years ahead to determine the exact reasons why. There's obviously going to be a lot of speculation, I think, that will follow. And obviously it's a challenging building environment, building on the coastline. And there could obviously be issues there. We're dealing with a building that is over 40 years old, weathering, and obviously a different regulatory environment than we would expect today. So, multiple issues, I imagine. It looks like it could be an issue of perhaps compliance, specification, and installation perhaps not having been done correctly. Very difficult to say for certain until we know more and those investigations are conducted in detail.
Yeah, look, I've got to say it is a bit shocking though, isn't it? I mean, buildings just don't collapse like that. I mean, you know, there's got to be some sort of, if not force, then some sort of reason in terms of, you know, let's call it a catastrophic failure, I believe is the engineering term. Or at least it is in the aircraft engineering. I guess there are similarities there. But can you let me know, like, are there rules and regulations and standards in the US like there are here? How is their environment when it comes to building?
I think every developed country has sophisticated mechanisms of building codes, regulatory structures. The US is no different to Australia in that regard at the high level. But the structures and the implementation of how building codes and regulations are controlled and governed obviously are different In Australia, we have the National Construction Code, and we have each state has their own building regulations that align with that. Whereas the US, to my understanding, is probably a bit more bottom up. The way that it's rolled out is slightly different. Again, we have the influence and oversight of different governmental bodies and private companies in terms of how those compliance is controlled, and every state in the US has differences. So Australia, we have our states in the US is obviously many more climate zones. Again, different social expectations across the US as well. And so it's, I'd suggest it's a very complex complex environment of regulations. And you're right, building collapses are relatively rare, and that really has to be stressed. I think it is shocking for that reason. This is not a common occurrence by any stretch of the imagination. 40 years is not an old building. Relatively speaking, we would have expectations as a society that these buildings, whether they're built by the coast or not, should be fit for purpose. And we should also have the expectations that the way that they get built, the way that they're designed and executed and signed off in that regulatory environment, we would obviously expect that to be of a good standard, regardless of whether it was the 70s, 80s, 90s, or today.
What kind of accountability do you think that they're going to be looking at? I mean, there'd be a local, state, and federal, wouldn't there?
Yeah, I think. I mean, it in many ways it's perhaps reminiscent of the recent Grenfell Tower disaster and the fires in London. We've seen very serious investigations conducted in the UK, almost at that kind of Royal Commission level that we would have a knowledge of in Australia. And I would expect that the state of Florida will conduct a similar type of inquiry to try to establish that accountability. But in many ways, I think accountability in the built environment can be very complex, because especially when we're looking at historic issues, historic failures, it's reliant not only on the immediate investigation, the sifting through the rubble of the immediate site, but also documentation around decision making at the time of the building's design, its construction, who is involved in the project team. And so typically our research as a research group, we're dealing with that complex environment, trying to say we have not only buildings that contain millions of parts, but we have temporary organizations that are set up and established to design and build those buildings. And in those temporary organizations, we have new members coming together, collaborating for the first time to build a building. And so that would have been no different when this condo was constructed. In that complex web, there's a number of I'd say current research challenges or issues looking at how can we create these environments of collaboration in the design of buildings, but also in terms of execution. How can we trace decision making through that supply chain in order that there is more lasting, ongoing accountability? And the sad fact of the matter is that if we look back in the 70s and 80s, that's a traceability, the decision making, that historic decision making, those records may not be intact, or companies that built the building may no longer be in existence. And so I would say that it's perhaps a fraught area. So in terms of direct accountability, it's potential we may never know. But I would suggest that at a higher level, the accountability or the reasons for the failure, we're likely to find out, and that is probably a good thing, I would say, rather than seeing accountability as a sort of moment of justice to know the reasons for the failure, or perhaps to change practices into the future That would be the, you know, a very positive outcome if it shines a light on some of these challenges.
It's interesting you mentioned the term supply chain. Now, I know that you said earlier that building collapses are rare. That's true. I mean, I guess in the sort of developed world, I mean, maybe a little bit more common developing world, but still they are, even there, they're uncommon. But something's come to my mind. So if we go back to 9/11, I mean, one of the reasons why they were saying that 9/11, well, why the two towers collapsed was because the, I believe, you can correct me here, I mean, going back a few years, but one of the reasons was that the, was it the insulation, the fire insulation on the steel beams wasn't as thick or wasn't as well applied or whatever it was as it was supposed to be. Then you've mentioned Grenfell, which is really interesting as well, which came down to the fact that someone swapped the cladding with, you know, slightly not recommended cladding, dare I say. And now with this one, I mean, again, we don't know what the reason is. It'll probably be, you know, at least a year until they come up with some sort of, you know, valid and irrefutable reason. However, it probably is not surprising that someone's done made a shortcut somewhere along the line. Is it possible that we are seeing, dare I say, the chickens coming home to roost over many years of supply chains not being properly, I guess, policed of people over the years, you know, doing small, like at the time it may seem like a small shortcut, but compounded with other issues and environmental issues and, you know, dare I say, water leaking, you know, water dissolves everything to one extent or another. Could we be seeing the result of this, and could we possibly be seeing more of these events in the future?
Yeah, I think that supply chain traceability, tracking, compliance, specification, material compliance is probably the common thread through these disasters. In a way, it's like I said, construction is an incredibly complex environment to be working in. It's distinct from manufacturing. So our research group, we like to look at other industries and say, what can we learn from manufacturing? What can we learn from pharmaceutical industries and pull back to construction and say, well, what then would need to change when we're dealing with construction? How can we as an industry improve? And I would say that this is what we generally refer to as sort of industrialization of building. Yeah, certainly the supply chain, logistics, I guess accountability of decision making, and these mechanisms of collaboration are aspects of our research that I think respond to these issues that you raise. If the chickens are coming home to roost, I think potentially we're at a moment, I would say. Late 20th century, early 21st century, where construction really has not changed fundamentally for hundreds of years prior, whereas other industries have taken these steps to change, innovate, introduce new mechanisms that address some of these problems that we're facing around, ultimately accountability or compliance and how do we gain certainty as an industry and deliver that certainty to the public that buildings are fit for purpose, that they're everything is as it should be, but also in ways that respond to that complexity. So in manufacturing, I would say supply chain traceability, when you're dealing with the number of parts that are in an iPhone, that is an easier task than when we're dealing with, I think, a 60, 70 story high rise tower, just the sheer number of parts, ensuring every single one of those complies to standards that we expect. That really is the challenge, because not only are we dealing with complex artifact, but then the teams that are established to deliver that building, they're going to be different from site, project to project, site to site, in the way that consumer manufactured products, it's, you know, producing the same, you've got probably the same supply chain coming together to deliver every single iPhone than building. So how do we create these systems of traceability and accountability that are robust enough to handle complexity, but also handle the changing environment? And I think that's where new technologies are emerging, and new ways of interacting and collaborating. That's where I get, you know, I'm optimistic that we will improve as an industry. But then as we look back and get lessons from these failures, I think it does begin to highlight some of the problems that have existed historically. And so they provide very much relief, in terms of what direction the industry is moving.
I'm Branko Miletic. Thanks for listening to Talking Architecture and Design, brought to you in association with the Architecture and Design Network. The A&D Network proudly presents the Sustainability Awards, now in their 14th year. You can find more information at sustainablebuildingawards.com.au.
And now back to our podcast. It's interesting you talk about you're optimistic for the future. I'm thinking of the Egyptians. Apparently their buildings have never fallen. I was going to say, you know, I'll quote you something here. I think I'm quoting you, actually. The Florida building was old and was built under outdated building regulations. And the reason I'm reading you this is because I want to localize this. You further went on to say, there are some cracking issues here in Australia, even with newer builds, such as Sydney's Mascot Towers in 2019. This raises the need to look at both historic issues, as you just pointed out, and the evolution of current regulations, which you said earlier. They are ever-changing, but often too slowly. That is correct, Duncan. Let's talk local. Yep. We have had issues, haven't we? We've had in Sydney, we've had Opal Towers, we've had Mascot Towers, or Opal Tower, rather, Mascot Towers. We have had in Melbourne, we've had the La Crosse building having flammable cladding. We've had other issues of quality over the years, and maybe not catastrophic issues, but still issues of quality. Do you think that we are possibly, and I don't want to sound like, you know, the Chicken Little here, the Cassandra, you know, that's all gonna come crashing down around our ears, literally and figuratively, but do you think that those two little examples here in Australia point to a potential there? There could be issues here as well.
Well, I think that quote you read back to me, that was certainly made, that comment about the Miami building being old. It's to put it in context of it, those projects you mentioned in Australia, particularly Mascot Towers. It's by no means an old building. We've seen these issues arise, and so in terms of accountability and being able to get in and actively investigate those issues, having live examples, there is a definite opportunity there, not only to hold people accountable, but also to really understand the decision making. Records will be current. Building regulations will be current in those circumstances. So really, I think making the point, like I said, Miami buildings by no means old as such, but it did get built in a time other than today. And I think that the Mascot Towers, those examples in Australia, I think there's a are we likely to see more of them potentially? I think the flammable cladding issue has really highlighted some of the problems that exist in building regulation when it comes to, say, issues of material testing and performance. Because like I said, that buildings are complex. So you can take a single element and subject it to certain tests, and it will give you certain results. you take that single element and attach it to seven or eight other conditions and expose it to the natural environment, and you subject it to humans, and it's going to perform in different ways than the regulatory system that puts the single material in a lab. And so I think the flammability issue that we've seen and practices are now subject to a changing insurance. You know, insurers are responding to that. We have had state and local governments respond to that very, very, I think, proactively in terms of the outcomes, not only of those local examples, but also Grenfell. I think that has shown in a way that there can be quick responses to catastrophic issues. But then it also, to my mind, highlights the ability when we have local and current failures to get in and analyze the reasons for those. And so that's really where I think we focus our research trying to analyze those case studies and to be able to try and suggest new ways of building, new ways of collaborating, new ways of project execution, and trying to get that thread through the supply chain that will respond and improve over time.
Mentioned the manufacturing and pharmaceutical industries, which is interesting because I worked in both a long time ago. And I know for a fact that what they did to ensure quality, at least, was to implement standards. Very, very paper heavy back in those old days standards where there was a lot of filling out forms and ticking boxes and cross-checking. And yes, it was tedious. It was onerous. But it worked, okay. I don't think it made productivity any better, but it certainly ensured that things were done in the case of the paint industry, for example, into the formulas that were set, rather than people doing shortcuts. Do you think that such a regulatory environment is possible for the construction industry?
I think standards, standards, trades registrations, those levels of compliance do exist. I would say that perhaps it's about oversight or mechanisms for tracking that compliance that perhaps require greater consideration or innovation. But certainly I'd say that in construction they do exist, as I was saying, in manufacturing, quality assurance, quality control, I believe is much more straightforward than in construction, simply because of the fact you're building inside, you're building in a warehouse that has controlled conditions, your supply chain procurement mechanisms are known and tested and reliable. Whereas as soon as we're building outside the elements with a team that comes together around a specific project with different material suppliers, perhaps often changing material suppliers within a very large building, can't get steel reinforcing bars from your preferred supplier, so you get 60% from one supplier, 40% from another. Yes, those materials should comply and they will comply to Australian standards, but it just requires one slip up, how we get vision deep in the supply chain, I think, is the real opportunity of the future, and that's where we're seeing some really interesting technological innovations come through, and then we're also seeing innovations in terms of trades training, use of technology to provide new mechanisms of training the trades, and also professional management training and innovation in that regards as well. And we're seeing our regulatory authorities also look to shift and adapt. So I don't think the construction industry is staying still, but I think it's in terms of the direction of movement that is going to be, and the pace of movement that will be the interesting thing internationally, and then how Australia competes really in that drive forwards as well. But yeah, just to pull it back, I think, yeah, we of course have standards. I would say everybody in the industry, unless they're deliberately, bad practitioners or devious, I would say nobody goes into a construction project with the intent that it's, you're just designing it so that it'll last 20 years. I think everybody wants to pull in the same direction. But it's just how do we ensure that the good actors are supported, and that those very rare instances of bad practice are identified and held to account.
You mentioned technology a couple of times. I mean, what are you actually talking about? Like, are we talking about bricklaying robots, or talking about some sort of drone technology? I mean, in effect, I mean that technology kind of overlaps with standards, doesn't it? Because if you have let's talk about my favorite. Well, the only one I actually know is the bricklaying robot. I mean, you don't have to audit the robot because you can download basically what the robot's done anyway. But you're pretty sure that the robot isn't going to, in the middle of the day decide, no, I'm going off for a 2-hour lunch or a smoko, and then not do his job. So are we talking about this kind of robotics, or when you said technology, or what are we actually talking about?
Yeah, there's a huge range of opportunity, I would say, and of course the robotic arms and drones are the very visible aspects of technology that say as a research group we encounter. But I mean, I would dial it back and say that even offsite building is a form of technological innovation. Prefabrication is by no means new, but we're seeing automated wall production lines or facade panels that are built in a controlled environment. Mm-hmm. You're building elements of buildings in a controlled environment. That's going to raise your building quality and some of those QA quality control procedures, and perhaps greater levels of standardization. But it's not just the visible physical technology. I think there's also emergence of Bluetooth tracking tags, RFID tags to track elements through the supply chain. So if we're ordering facade panels from a manufacturer in China, or we're ordering timber and it's being shipped from, being processed in Germany and being shipped to Australia, we're able to gain some visibility into the supply chain and understand how it's being manufactured. We're seeing other elements like the use of blockchain in the form of blockchain ledgers to again provide that visibility into the supply chain and gain understanding of material provenance. We're seeing technology introduced into building contracts to control and monitor payments and perhaps create different mechanisms of project sign-off, the introduction of micropayments, so that rather than having scheduled release of finance, it's much more much more fluid. So there's a real spread, I would say, of technological opportunity that's there. Construction, some of these ideas are by no means new, but I would argue that there's perhaps a constellation and a few of these technologies will come together in the future in ways that perhaps they haven't in the past.
Do you think also that in terms of when we talk about things like Miami, the Miami collapse, or other sort of building failures, there I call them. Does the environment and climate play some role here? I mean, does you know, extraordinary heat and maybe, as I mentioned earlier, more water than you actually need. Do they also influence as to how or if a building will suffer a catastrophic failure?
Yeah, of course. I think it's not only in the life of the building, but also the construction phase. So, I mean, take concrete, for example. The rate at which it cures is based on the ambient conditions. As soon as we build off-site, there's greater control over concrete. So precast concrete panels, we would have more certainty over the concrete performance in terms of if it's precast against if it's built on site. Of course, we understand how concrete cures in hot weather, in cold weather, in damp conditions, in dry conditions. But having that control in an off-site environment is going to lead to a higher quality product than, to my mind, one that is built on site. But then, of course, over the life of the building, yeah, I think already there've been some suggestions that, yeah, perhaps climate change has played a part. You know, coastal erosion is a major issue, and how local authorities protect buildings in a shorefront environment, that could have played a part. Obviously, yeah, Florida is subject to cyclones in the way that parts of Australia are as well, and over the years how buildings perform and how high rise buildings in particular or that medium rise, how they perform over time is a factor not to be discounted as well. But no, I think the physical conditions are really what stand construction apart as an industry when we compare it to others, and so they're always, I think, That's the extra layer of complexity against the product that we deliver as well.
Well, Dr. Duncan Maxwell, you've made me fearful to ever go into a tower in Queensland. That's all I can say. Thank you very much for your time. That was very enlightening, and I think you've explained at least partly as to why we saw what we did see in Miami. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Good to be with you.
You've been listening to Talking Architecture and Design. Until next time, goodbye.
I'm Brent Kermalitic, and thanks for listening to Talking Architecture and Design, brought to you in association with the Architecture and Design Network. You can catch up with news, projects, interviews, and much more at architectureanddesign.com.au, where you can also subscribe to our newsletters and magazine.